The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime. It's World Daily. Lots to talk about today. Lots to talk about today. Speaking of today, late games, afternoon games, evening games makes life a little bit easier. We have our mornings back at least. Spain against Austria.
Yeah,
that might be interesting given Spain's performances so far, but they'll probably find themselves at just the right time. Portugal, Croatia, live from Toronto.
Huge.
That is, I imagine, and we'll get into it, but I imagine an absolute gong show in Toronto right now. I've seen some video when the bus arrived, and all because of a certain Bruno Fernandes. Amazing that he's so popular. Who would have known? And then the late one is Switzerland against Algeria, which is one of those games that, oh, really? That's a knockout round game, but I bet it's going to be amazing and maybe the best of the bunch. That's kind of how it happens. Let's start before we get to yesterday's match.
Hey, wait. Sure. Vancouver, correct?
Yes. Yes, yeah, sorry.
So shout out to Vancouver. I just wanted to make sure after our Portuguese diaspora conversation that Vancouver was getting a shout out too, because they've been doing some great things out there.
They have. Vancouver will be buzzing today. I'm sure of it. It'd be amazing. But let's be honest, Portugal, Croatia in Toronto is just it's crazy. So, and let's talk about that before we get to the games and the storylines from yesterday. And of course, the Canada talk. You guys are all in Toronto right now.
Well, thereabouts. Not really. Just me. I'm the only one in Toronto.
Well, that's right. Because that's true. Craig's in Seattle right now. Dubsy's, well, I can't tell when Dubsy's in Toronto these days. She's traveling like ridiculous schedule
between it's just her background, Toronto, right? That's the only reason we
that
know.
Gives it away. Yeah.
Yeah.
And JC, well, of course, but you're kind of a little bit.
I'll be there in a few hours.
Yeah.
I'll be there in a few hours.
He's in Ontario. Okay,
so Waller, let's ask you then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm here.
Is and the there's flags. Tangible right now?
Oh, it is. You can feel it. And I went for a walk into the Junction, which is an old Portuguese staple, too. I haven't been down to Little Portugal. I've been a little afraid about that. But flags everywhere. And I have to say, representing both Canada and Portugal. There are the old schools. There's the numbers that came out were 170,000 families. Like that's the size of the diaspora in Portugal, in North America, in Toronto. It's the largest diaspora in North America.
I thought it was diaspora. It's diaspora.
I think it's potato potato.
Depends diaspora on who you play for.
Right.
Diaspora
correct.
is a sugar substitute in your.
That's
pretty sure.
The Dubs is now pushing on Footy Prime.
Yeah. Has this been is her segue. Some nefarious health issues, though.
Yes.
But what was amazing to me, and this is the big thing, 10 years ago, you wouldn't see the Canadian flags. You'd only see the Portuguese flags at Euros or at World Cups. Now you're seeing kind of double representation. So it's like, hey, we know we've got two chances to win. This is like a good lotto. This is like Lotto Ontario.
Yeah. In their defense, it's very rare that Canada had a chance to win the Euros.
No, fair. Yes. Well, maybe not.
Charms.
That's changing. That's changing, Charms. We could be in the Euro.
Yeah, that is true. Mark Carney has his way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that'd be amazing, actually.
Yeah.
Canada in the Euros.
So no, it's quite a representation, and I saw JC nodding. It's pretty impressive what they're doing, and I'm excited. JC and I will be hosting that match at Earl's tonight, so we're excited about that. Mm-hmm. So if you're finding yourself looking for a place to watch the game, come down to Earl's at 601 King Street West, JC and I will be putting on our normal last show. It's the last show.
I'm sad that it's our last little perform. I think we should just start doing a daily, like, just at random bars.
In my backyard to our neighbors.
Yeah, just set up a big karaoke speaker and just start doing it. Hydration break! Like, oh, no. Hydration break.
Do you guys jump in there during the hydration breaks? During the performance?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, we do, eh?
Nice. We give away stuff during the hydration break. We'll have a trivia question, and then we'll ask everyone to raise their hydration. Everyone grab their hydration and cheers it. And then we give a shout out to the staff.
Yeah.
Because the staff serve the hydration.
Yeah. You know, remember you used to have, like, comic duos? Like the Beatles in England, so Craig will know this. They used to be like comic duos, Morecambe and Wise, Little and Large.
Oh, you know, duos?
Duos, yeah. Duos. Oh,
I didn't know what he meant. Did he just come up with a new word?
Also duos. Coffee sweetener.
You sounded like it was
have a duo in your coffee.
You sounded like it was a scientific.
I had a duo after my coffee.
A duo or something. Yeah,
it's a movement, people. It's a movement.
Dust.
But there used to be comic duos, which you don't really get anymore until we had the Wonger and JC.
Oh yes, we're a duo. Won't be that doing it.
Potential
up.
There.
Wonger and the Ginge.
But that's it's great, and I'm just going through some of the biggest sporting events that Tronzo's hosted, right? They've hosted World Series, they've hosted Grey Cups, I believe they've hosted Stanley Cups, but I don't know if that's true or not. It's a long time ago.
It's a myth, right? It's like triplets. You're not sure if they're real because you don't really see them in the world,
not
right?
Real.
But they do talk about it.
Yes.
It's like a myth, right?
What else? Oh, we had Donovan Bailey against Michael Johnson.
I don't remember that. 150 meters. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What else?
Well, the
obviously Canada World Cup games. I mean, that right was gamer, which is
the enormous. NBA championship.
Oh, okay, yes. Of course. Sorry. NBA course. Championship. Yeah. Yep. But I think this might be the biggest.
Wow.
World Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Globally,
arguably, yeah, sure. Arguably top three now.
Yeah,
from a worldwide perspective,
World Series
number one. I mean, there might be a billion people watching that worldwide.
Mm-hmm. I'm streaking. I got to get out there.
we had a few of those in Seattle yesterday. They weren't streaking, but there was three pitch invasions.
Were there really?
Wow. You were great for us on the call.
Oh, so thanks. Good. Thanks. It was an easy game. Well, not an easy game, but with everything going on and the goals and opportunities and penalties and all that, it was pretty chaotic.
This is a Belgium-Senegal game for those. Do you want to get to that now? But when before, or do you have anything more to say about Portugal-Croatia?
I just wanted to add that, yes, worldwide, globally, it's the biggest thing ever to descend upon our country, you could argue, not even just Toronto. But it has to be a balance between what the eyeballs are on it, the meaning for the outside world, but then also what it means for Torontonians and what it means for Canadians. And I think we're at a point now where we're not quite on par, but we're getting there. So that is contributing to, you know, all of the noise and the hype and the buzz in a city, I imagine, right now, where I am not James Sharman, I am in Montreal, but I can imagine that's tangible, like that's palpable right now when you're walking around the city, where you could feel it earlier on when I was in a city and I showed up and it was Panama versus Croatia. And there was something different, like when I landed and walking down to the city and around Union and people in their kit. And we've talked about this, but I can imagine a match of this scale and the superstar power, whether it's Ronaldo or it's Modric or just the history of these two teams. But then again, the larger scale of what it means now to be a football fan of any country in Toronto or in Canada. Like, I think we're there now. So I think it probably feels bigger than it ever has.
Do you think it's bigger? I mean, globally it's bigger, but for the city and the country, Canada, Bosnia was bigger. Do you not think? First match of the World Cup in Canada?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
That was Canada, right?
That's
within our lens as Canadian sports, it was bigger. But yes, globally speaking, there's more eyeballs on this game, obviously.
Correct. But I would add to that, that, you know, the what we felt then and the swell of pride and the meaning for that match and the support behind the Canadians, if it had been the Canadian storyline up until this point, and then it was our round of 16 match being played in Toronto, that would be sick, right? Because you would feel the build and there would be a shift in the fandom and the feel of the match. And we, unfortunately, we've talked about this, you know, but we won't get to experience that.
Yes, I think you're right. And that's, that is too bad, but we can criticize FIFA on another day with how they organize tournaments in these co-hosting events. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, we know how many Portuguese fans are out there. He discussed that, the diaspora.
This message is brought to you by Tim Hortons at participating restaurants in Canada for a limited time.
Introducing Tim's Taste of the Globe, a limited time squad of globally inspired Timbits and iced cap flavors.
And trust us, this lineup came to play.
We're talking a Brazilian lime cheesecake Timbit,
a French chocolate creme brulee Timbit,
an Italian cappuccino Timbit,
and a Canadian fireworks Timbit,
plus a Mexican caramel churro ice cap that absolutely deserves a chant.
It's game on at Tim's with the new Timbits and ice cap flavors from around the globe.
Try them all today.
I will.
I know you will. Now back to the show.
But it is nice, Mongo. You're saying that there's lots of Canadian flags out there.
There are.
Fantastic. It's a little thing that for us is a lot, actually.
It's a huge thing. I was actually surprised by it because you are seeing kind of the double flags in the windows. It's not just the Portuguese flag. It's the like the Canadian flag and the Portuguese flag, which is great because that means that that second generation or first generation Canadians, they are now embracing Canada's national teams instead of going back to where their parents were celebrating those teams. It actually shows the growth of the game and, you know, Canada soccer, it's about sharing those stories. So we've talked about what a great job that Paulo Senra and his team has done on the marketing side of letting people in, not always the right letting in, but I think he's pretty much nailed it. 95% of the time, the stories that they've been sharing, the access has been kind of the right amount, the perfect amount. And I think it's showing this way because it's, you know, just in the same way Footy Prime has been growing throughout this. I'm sure Canada Soccer just saw their like 250 million impressions and all of this kind of stuff that people talk about in the marketing and sales world and, you know, how you're getting eyeballs onto something.
We'll get that social post in a few weeks' time with all the numbers.
It'll be presented
beautifully on some kind of graphic.
Yeah.
You know, and be like, oh, okay, that it was a pretty big tournament for Canada and what it means moving forward. Yeah, it's pretty exciting. Okay, let's get to these games yesterday, shall we? Well, as Craig mentioned it, let's start there. We've got so many storylines here. Big ones, and yeah, we'll get to that. Some big ones. Belgium, Senegal, 3-2 Belgium. Senegal up 2-0, Craig. A late call in extra time to win it. I mean, yeah, you just have to feel for Senegal, but my God, talk about resilience of the Belgians, who everyone's written off from day one. Ah, their golden generation, it was wasted. They haven't played very well. Well, maybe that can be the launching pad for a deep run.
And just a reminder to everybody that Craig was calling the game for the FIFA broadcaster. So you heard Craig. If you were watching that game, you were listening to Craig and Dave. So, you know,
I'm in the States. I didn't get Craig.
Oh, you got Fox, right?
You got Foxed.
Foxed off.
Yeah. Can I just say before Forrest launches into this that there have been tons of comments online about how magnificent Craig is on the call and how people have kind of forgotten about him, which is crazy because just tune into Footy Prime and he's also on NSL calls this year. So people who are in that kind of soccer bubble, thrilled to hear Craig's voice again. But my own sister, Bonnie, every time you're on the call, she's just like, I love Forrest's voice. He's so knowledgeable, but like the tone of his voice just accompanying me in watching the game is the best thing. It's like eating a freshly baked chocolate chip cookie. Like she just loves the sound of your voice. And it's true. You're just there like you've always been there. So long may that continue.
Craig would be a great palliative care doctor.
Yeah.
Or just a translator for the palliative care doctor. He would be the in between, right? The translator.
Ask them if they're ready. Are they ready? So, yeah, you ready?
Where's
Whatever
that going?
You say, Mr. Forrest. The lovely voice. Yeah. Craig, sorry, go ahead. In your beautiful tones, tell us about the game.
Well, it was very interesting, of course. And, Senegal were just brilliant out of the gates. The best they've been in this tournament. Balance of this team. Chow, the coach, has got things just about bang on. And they dominated. And even though you could talk about Belgium's resilience and all that, there was nothing there to show us that this was going to turn around. Nothing. You could say, oh, they were on the front foot. They were pushing. They weren't giving up and all that. It was like they had run out of ideas. So it was just the game was just drifting out. They were in the 85th minute. It was 2-0.
Mm-hmm.
Never seen anything like it. And then the legendary Lukaku in his 92nd international goal pops up with a just out of nothing brilliant finish. And okay, 86th minute. You know, is it going to be some time added on and? Could they possibly turn us around? Still didn't really look likely. Then a ball whipped into the box. The goalkeeper who played very well, Murray Tao, he was excellent. But well, on that particular cross in the box, he was a split second late.
Mm-hmm.
And Tielemans gets on the end of it. And you could argue there was a little bit of a push there too, maybe embellished by the defender, didn't get the call. And now all of a sudden, things are turned upside down on their heads and you're 2-2 going to extra time. Amazing. And then that kind of died a little bit. The game looked, the first period of extra time was, you could tell the legs were heavy. Senegal were unable to get into those positions that they were when they're running on full steam and didn't create an awful lot. And then out of the blue, a ball whipped into the box. Couple opportunities, bangs it off the bar, and all of a sudden we're like, oh, there's going to be a VAR check for a penalty.
Yeah.
Oh. Can I ask, did you see while you were watching live? Because my eyes were, I watched the entire match, listened to you. I cuddled up beside my sleeping pillow and listened to you talk the whole time, pal.
Oh, heavens.
Yeah. It was something. Did you see what they were talking about from your vantage point watching the game? Did you see what they were talking about to pull it up to VAR right away? Or was that?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, we had an idea what they were looking at, but it was just so quick. And the timing of the challenge was just almost simultaneous. And, you know, it just didn't seem as though that was going to be something that they would look at. And then they were. And then the referee was pulled over to the monitor. And you're like, okay. You can see what they're doing here. But in a moment like that, with two teams that have battled it out and they're just seconds away from going to penalties, dissecting these things with super slow motion, you know, it's like a court case. It's like, and the referee's standing at the monitor for over a minute, looking at every angle, stills, everything like that. It's like, well, what happened to the clear and obvious? What happened to like, just letting it play and the referee's initial decision. Like he could have actually walked away from the monitor and say, I'm going to stick with my original decision that I didn't give a penalty. And there has to be a certain amount of that. I thought that they didn't want to interfere that much. And it just turns into something that I just think it was just wasn't worthy of giving a penalty at that moment. I mean, okay, if you're going to slow it down and put it under a microscope. Did he get to the ball first? Did he clip his ankle? Yeah, there's a bit of contact, but what are we talking about here? Like it's a physical game. And I thought it was so close and simultaneous that it wasn't worthy of that at that moment. But it's a game of opinions and you know, for Senegal, yeah, but they're going to do an awful lot with the African Cup of Nations as well.
Right.
They're going to feel a bit hard done by for sure.
You used the word harsh over and over. You said it three times, I think. I was waiting for. So can you explain to me, and this is me not knowing, so I'm asking the question, who's making that decision at the end? Is it VAR or is it the referee? What level of agency does the referee have if VAR is saying, this is what we see, this is our call? Who's making that decision?
Well, VAR initially will get in his ear and say, we've seen a potential penalty. Looking at it, he's waiting, and then they eventually say, we think it's worth you having a look. So inevitably, it's the referee who's going to make the final decision. That's what they want. But he made a decision, and that was a no decision that it was a penalty. He let the play run. So that has to be taken into mind as well. But is he thinking now he's at the monitor, he doesn't want to almost undermine the VAR referees? They want to be looking like they're all on the same page. So it'd take a brave guy to walk away from that monitor and say, after further review,
I wish he had been brave, because I was feeling the same way as you, or at least I felt I felt that it was hard done by.
I mean, regardless of like the dissecting and all that, like when you put everything in perspective, and that these two teams, and there's so much at stake, so much. Let the players decide who's going to win this game, and I don't think that happened.
I don't necessarily disagree with that, but on the fact that it was called a red and he's called to the monitor by the VAR team, that it doesn't always, it's not always just clear and obvious. It can be a serious missed incident. So if the VAR room decides that that is something that the referee missed, then that can also bring him over, he or she, over to the monitor. So I didn't think it was a red until I saw it, not in slow-mo, not as a still.
Not a red, just a penalty.
No, the penalty.
Excuse me. Penalty, yep.
We'll get to that one.
I know. Everything's coming together. Just a pen, absolutely. Where you saw it from the other perspective, not from where the ball had come from the left-hand side, but the other angle, where you saw it from the right-hand side, or like the other side of the pitch, where then you saw his shooting leg was impeded by the movement of the defender. And there I still felt it was harsh, to agree with you, but I saw more of a case for why it was a pen. So I still think, like, where everything was, I think you have to remove yourself. Is it an extra time? It, you know, it means that Belgium has come back from the dead to, you know, to potentially win this thing. You have to take the context away, and you just say, this incident right now, like, how would I call this on any day, no matter what the implications are, no matter what the stakes are. Mm-hmm. So I think you saw the striker impeded in his ability to finish the ball. So I could see the argument for the pen from that angle.
Dubs, what would have been your call as the ref?
I mean, I would have done the same thing as the ref on the pitch. I wouldn't have blown the whistle.
Oh, right. But that's the whistle. What would have happened if they called you into the... Would you have changed your decision?
Seeing it from that angle, yes.
Oh, God. See, nuance.
How is that clear and obvious?
But it doesn't have to be clear and obvious. That's the thing. It's just like a missed incident on the pitch, and then the referee can go back and change their mind.
And they're going to stand there for a minute and look at 16 different angles and freeze frames. Is this where we're at with
the game? I know. Like, I don't disagree with that, Forrest. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, that would give me doubt as the referee on the pitch. If I'm putting myself in his position, I've made the call from my vantage point and my perspective, and now I've got a new angle to see the same play again. It would put doubt in my mind as that head referee.
Yeah, you start overthinking things at that point a little bit, I think, as well.
Yeah, right? And whether that's wrong or right is a whole other discussion, right?
Yeah, because you watch it at full speed from that one angle, which is the referee's job, and it's two guys coming together, full speed, great speed. It's a football play. There's going to be contact. It isn't malicious. I mean, people keep throwing this whole intent thing, and like, intent's not a word. Like, throw it out, right? But there's two men coming together at great speed. You can't call it. especially and then I mean, you shouldn't really decide, well, what's called with a minute left in extra time shouldn't be called that you call half an hour earlier. That shouldn't be it at all. Foul is a foul is a foul. As the author of The Grinch, what's his name again?
Dr. Zeus.
Thank you. Our brains this morning, eh? Dr. Zeus once wrote that a foul is a foul is a foul, right? I'm pretty sure it's a book. Yes. But it's about chickens, actually.
This discussion has run afoul.
It certainly has. But you just can't, I just don't think you can do it, though, in that moment. I mean, the bottom line is there are moments in football, and you're that close to a shootout, and it's probably the fair outcome. I know new people to the sport don't understand penalties, and no one likes penalties, but it is usually the fairest way to solve something that hasn't been solved over 120 minutes. To solve it with a penalty, which, by the way, was timed brilliantly by Tielemans under that kind of pressure.
Above the Craig Forrest equator, right?
Correct. Yeah. Topic of cancer. I want to say I love Dave's call on that, because he said, I don't remember it verbatim, but he said you could potentially doubt the call, but you can't doubt that finish. Like, it was just really well said. And he said it better, but it was to that.
It was a very good line. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, very well balanced. I thought, you know, you balanced that kind of out, you know. But then at the same time, I mean, I'm calling the game for the international feed, and, you know, I still have to be true to myself and things like that. And I don't think they have a problem with that.
You hope they don't have a problem with that.
If they don't want you speaking freely and showing people who you are, then like, what are we doing? That's why you have the type of person that you are. That's why you would have you back, because of your knowledge, because of your credibility, because of your history, but that also in the moment you are willing to speak and tell people what you think and what you feel. You don't want somebody who's guarded and thinking about possible, you know, consequences down the line for saying what you actually think. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the worst possible person you'd want on a call.
Yeah. But I think if you look back on it, like in the whole stadium, if they had just let play continue, give a goal kick after the initial chance hit the post or the crossbar, nobody would have said anything.
You're probably right.
But again, that shouldn't be the motivation for what doing. No. Yeah. But I agree with you. Forrest, can you talk about Senegal's second goal? Because this was just, it was brilliant. It was direct play. Mm. It was perfectly weighted. It was struck with real intent, to use that word again, Sharms, but in a different context. Okay. And the way it was taken and finished, and two defenders converging on Sarr, but he was still able to find the finish.
Yeah, it was one of the best goals of the World Cup, right? I mean, we have to admit that it's up there for sure. That ball traveled 50, 60 yards, and it was coming in with some pace, perfect run, perfect timing. Like you say, he's pretty marked up. The first touch, as he just brings that down, is just amazing on his chest. Then managed to pull his body weight across the defender. Now the defender's, he's got a decision to make. Make contact, pull him down, or just hope that he doesn't finish it. But the touch was so perfect onto his, then going to hit it with his right foot.
Yeah.
He then, his coach was like, you know, he's hoping for a bad touch too. A little heavy off the chest, and he's going to come out. And it's perfect. Now he's exposed. Just need to finish it, and he smashes it past. Yes. It's just incredible and well deserved. They really were the better team for 85 minutes.
And when Doku and De Bruyne get subbed off, it's before the hour mark, and I'm like, wow, okay, here we go. From Senegal's perspective, like, this is an implosion of, you know, a grandest scale. And when you think about World Cup and the history, like, they had that game. And it's, you know, James Sharman, Kerry Ryan always tells you to say it, to cue it up. Most dangerous score in sports. But it didn't feel like they were trying to protect the lead. They were just the dominant side.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was just out of the blue. Lukaku hardly had a touch. You know, he couldn't get on the end of things. They weren't finding him until they did.
Happy you put on that extra 24 pounds. because he like bulked it up. The guy could get near. It was on his right foot. It was brilliant.
The guy's a wizard.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how much weight he's carrying. He can finish in the box.
Yeah.
My God.
He's played like 65 minutes this year for clubs. Like,
yeah.
Still, what a legend. It's amazing the narrative yesterday, overall narrative from African teams doing so well this World Cup, and they have been, and they are. I mean, a great story. And maybe there should be more African teams at the World Cup. To what happened in the end with Senegal crashing out and then Congo losing to England, despite, I mean, I guess my algorithm on social media is such that I get all the takes from the England fans and how they were feeling through that 90 minutes, and it wasn't good. There was despair and panic. There's some people saying, don't worry, they'll find a way. And then they were dominating. But my God, at 1-0, and for the next hour or so, or wherever it was, I genuinely thought we're about to see one of the great upsets in World Cup history.
Mm-hmm.
I give Congo so much credit, Craig, because they were brilliant for much of that game. And again, an African goalkeeper just bossing it for much of that.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's Harry Kane.
Harry Kane.
Yeah, Harry Kane. That's what they have. They have that X factor with him. You know, and when you look at the best teams in the world, they generally have that, right? Bosnia yesterday, they don't quite have it. Even Belgium, really, without Lukaku, they're struggling for somebody up top that can even come close to his level of play. You're going through a bit of a transition, of course, Belgium, you know, with all the players that have retired, with Kompany and Vertonghen and these type of guys.
Dubs, but yeah, and Kane's kind of part of that group, right? Contemporaries of his. Mm-hmm. But Harry Kane seems to just be getting better with age. 71 goals, I think, this year overall for club and country now.
And how about this golden boot race? Like, so we talked about the stars showing up. Mbappe's level with Messi with 6, and you've got Haaland neck and neck with Kane at 5, and then you've got Dembele at 4 with somebody else at 4. Who's also, with Vinny Jr.
just Vinny Jr.
Come on. talk about top billing, all the narratives that you want to bring in the eyeballs, which we know they're there already. But I mean, that is what you want, right? You want the big teams finding a way, which England did. Belgium too, you can argue, but you know, the doing it by way of the players that you think they're going to need to rely upon. And Harry Kane, you look at this guy and he's going to go down as one of the best finishers in the game, right? Like we know stats. Yeah. We know the stats that he's built up for club, but for country as well. And just the way that he can change a game. And you look at Gordon, a lot of Arsenal fans were like, well, look at what happened when Rice was moved to right back. And like, what a shift he put in, by the way. But you look at Saka and Eze and Rice and like the triangulation that was happening on the right hand side. And Arsenal fans was like, it's because of us. But I mean, that's just, you needed somebody to step to the fore, right? Because it wasn't happening. But I want to give flowers before I continue about Kane to Mpazi, because like the saves that he made in the first half on the headers from Jude Bellingham, I was just how? Like they just looked like sure goals. So again, these African nations where people are just understanding what AFCON is and who these individuals are and who these teams are, like we need to pay attention more to African football because it is quality stuff. And there are class and quality coming out of these teams and out of that confederation. So it wasn't going to be Jude, but it was going to be Harry Kane. And then I think Anthony Gordon as well, even though he's a doppelganger for Princess Di, like what he does in that channel.
He's hideous. Compared to Princess Di.
You need to do a deep dive. You're talking about algorithm, like my algorithm on Instagram gives me all of the Princess Di Anthony Gordon content. And I love it. I am so here for it. Long may that continue, but two assists assists for him, but Kane's movement for the first goal, the way that he is able to get away from, you know, like suffocating pressure because they know it's going to come from him, but it's inevitable. And he's able to kind of curl his run just over the course of like 2 yards to find the space to nod that in. And then Gordon again, who very calmly and coolly is able to feed it to him just at the top of the D, three defenders on him, half a turn, doesn't even look up at the goal, and is able to thrash it into the net.
Good work.
Where he, it was JP used it because I was describing it to him. He's like, oh, he thrashed it. I'm like, that is the perfect descriptor. That's exactly what he did, because to beat him, and Forrest, you can talk about this, to beat the keeper who was on a heater, who was hot, was brimming with confidence, you're going to go near post, you have to hit it top ends, don't you, from that angle?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, if I'm going to dissect the goalkeeper, who was absolutely brilliant, the header from Kane was savable. He just sort of missed it when it hit the bottom of his hand. That was savable. And then a second one, you could argue that his body shape, he was never going to get it back across the goalkeeper. Yeah. So I thought he could have just adjusted, not to say he would finish it, because he thrashed it into the near post. But if he adjusted his feet a little bit to the left and made the net a little bit smaller for himself, that would have been probably give him a chance to maybe make that save. But that's really being harsh on a goalkeeper who is brilliant on the day overall.
I mean, yeah, Kane can hurt you so many ways.
Yeah.
He's also a playmaker as well. He sits so deep sometimes. So, yeah, he's one of the great finishers. There's that conversation being had now. Is he the greatest England player of all time? And he has to be up there.
Yep.
He's the leading goal scorer, but he does so much. I mean, look at the other great players in my era, right? Alan Shearer was a great player. Right, great player. And this is one of those arguments. We're not dismissing anyone else and saying they were terrible by saying they're not the best ever. But Kane's better than Shearer. Can hurt you in different ways, as good as Shearer was. You go even further back, the Gary Linekers. I'm talking about strikers here. You know, more of a fox in the box. Really, really wonderful, world-class finisher. He wasn't Harry Kane. You've got the Paul Gascoignes of the world who, you know, never quite reached the heights we thought they could for various reasons. But then you go back to the 60s and the World Cup winning team, Bobby Charlton, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, it's hard to compare generations, Craig, but I don't know, man. This guy, we're seeing it now at a real proper club that can win championships finally, doing it. And 71 goals in one season. And they're not all headers. They're not all tap-ins from 6 yards out. He does that like the second goal. It's just incredible footballer. Leader.
It is.
No controversy around him.
Yeah, no. I mean, he's a brilliant guy, a likable fella too. He's been amazing. And the thing is, like at Spurs, he scored goals with them. He scored goals with anybody. And Bayern Munich saw that. They're like, well, I mean, Spurs were decent, but they weren't a top four side. And then he goes to Bayern Munich, and now he's playing for a juggernaut with, you know, clearly the best squad in the league. And you're just setting the man alight at that point. And he's just scoring goals. I mean, that's incredible tally. It's plus 70 goals, you know,
in a season. He's going to be an MLS one day. I was speaking to someone, MLS. Yeah,
like Lewandowski.
Speaking to somebody MLS a while back, and they were saying that they've had conversations already with him and his people about when that move happens. He is apparently obsessed with the States and American sports. He loves the NFL and genuinely has ambitions to try his wares as a kicker in the NFL. And it's not just one of these PR stunts. He thinks he can actually do it. So
I would love to see that.
Oh my God. Can you imagine? There's been some Aussie Rules players have done it, right? Have made the switch.
And then a Disney movie about it. I would watch that.
Yeah. Who play Harry Kane?
Interesting.
Jeff Goldblum.
He could. Jeff Goldblum starring as Jeff Goldblum once again.
Yeah.
Let's ask the listeners, who would play Harry Kane in the upcoming Disney flick, the English footballer becoming an NFL legend?
Yeah.
Well, they're doing there's also a new Princess Di biopic that's coming out, and I think this is who's going to be starring in it.
Looky.
Look, right?
It's a real stretch.
It is
Ansel
not.
Gordon and Princess Di. That's a real stretch.
You know, if I had about
Phil Foden.
Sharms, if I had 7 pints in 1988 and someone came up to me and said, I'm Princess Di, and I was in the right setting, hey, you
would
never
you
know.
Bring Anthony Gordon home thinking that she's Princess
I'm
Di.
Just, I would have given him a shot.
I mean, in bicycle shorts and an oversized sweatshirt, put him in that and he could fool anybody.
That's right.
Sharms, I want to ask you before we move off of England, what are they going to do at the right back position?
Well, Declan Rice, clearly.
No,
Jed Spence can't do the job. Can we get Trent in the squad somehow?
Yeah.
Well, Tuchel took 2 players that are injury prone, and now they're injured.
And that, imagine that. I mean, Reece James, he can't. I mean, what a wonderful footballer he is, but you just can't rely on him at all.
No, he's made of sugar. Did you see the quote though from Tuchel? He's just like, wow, this, it's so surprising. And everybody's like, no, it wasn't.
Oh, I don't know, Craig. I mean, Declan Rice, you need him in midfield, right? He has to be in midfield. He's one of the best in the world in that position, but I don't know.
Do we want Declan Rice versus Quinones? Probably not.
Jesus Christ. We'll get to that closer to the match, but it terrifies me. The Azteca.
What should terrify you, Sharms, is Thomas Tuchel's hairdo. I'm telling you, he's got to do something on the sideline.
Just shave the sides.
He's looking like Friar Tuck from Rocket Robin Hood back in the day. Like, band of brothers marching together, heads held high in all kinds of weather.
Stop it.
We've lost all of our listeners.
Clip it.
I mean, listen, the horseshoe, there was a time when the horseshoe was just what you did when you went bald, right? That was 20 years ago.
Yes, but it's not great anymore.
Terrible. That's why no one does it.
Did you see, and I don't know if there's any truth to this, if it was AI or what, but I still liked it, so I'm going to tell it. And it was about a young Mbappe who idolized Zidane, and he went to the hairdressers and he's like, give me the Zidane. And he wanted them to shave a bald patch. It was there and there, and the barber was like, I am not doing that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, listen, we've got to move on here because we haven't even got to the most controversial moment of the night, and that was the Flo Balogun red card as the States beat Bosnia-Herzegovina. Again, looking so good. Holy crap, though. I have caused a stir on my timeline. The Americans have discovered my general stir in the pot. Mm-hmm. We just see my timeline. It is blown up.
I nearly added to it. I was going to say, Sharms, what the F are you talking about?
Yeah, you're rage baiting the US fans.
No, I am not. It was a harsh red card. There's no doubt. But I've seen worse calls than that before. People are talking as if it's the worst call in the history of football. Sell down. Yeah. And all the whole Messi come. Yes, Messi, that was a bad call. Doesn't make this one.
But you also, Sharms,
whataboutism is crazy, right?
You have to be honest with yourself, too. You were watching the game on Fox. You threw Fox commentators out into it. So going back to Dubs' breakdancing and stirring the pot for Roger Rabbit there.
All I said was, I was just saying that it was really enjoyable. The commentators were just desperately trying to convince themselves that it wasn't a red card. And that I found funny. Whether they were right or not was irrelevant, but I found it really funny. And people have been I am apparently, England's a big target. I'm English, therefore, what right do I have to criticize them? I'm a loser. And then others saying that I'm Canadian. What right do I have? I'm a loser. Criticize them. Others saying I'm not English. I'm fake. Thanks for your support, Craig.
Forrest, I wish you would have waited. It would have been amazing.
You should have done. Oh my God. I haven't had this much hate for a long time. I woke up this morning. It's so much fun. I should get them together. Actually, some of the best ones because there's some doozies out there. But anyway, it was harsh. And again, it's the example of the referee looking at the slow-mo replay where it does look brutal.
Oh,
but I'm just saying, I've seen worse calls. I have seen these given before. It's not the first time. Yeah. That's my point.
Yeah. I just think it was a football play, 2 players coming together. It was kind of similar to Kone incident where there was no malice in it. I think he was just trying to put his foot down, competing, 2 guys competing for the ball, and the result was bad. They're going by the result of the incident. And
the ankle bending.
Yeah. But I thought it was complete accident. There was no malice in it. If I just thought it was a football play that resulted in an injury. I mean, at the end of the day, there is some, it is a physical sport. It's contact sport. And there's going to be a, there's going to be injuries. So just because there's a, an injury and a, he puts his foot down and it happens to roll on his ankle. I mean, what are we doing? Like people are competing. It happens all over the pitch all the time. All the time. And if you don't step on somebody's ankle, you get away with it. But otherwise you're like, you're playing with fire. I mean, is there no, you know, no challenges? Are going to be no tackles anymore? Like, I don't know. I just think, I think that's harsh decision. And though two decisions really that on the day, if you took them away, the Belgium penalty call and the red card on Balogun, I don't think anybody complains. I think they just got involved in a way that they just, it was unnecessary.
Well, and this one, it's not, the result was 2-0 in the States. Brilliant performance again. But this deprives them of their top striker for such a massive game. It's brutal. The actual law, I got this from, or the rule, they got this from actually the athletic story. Well, no, I mean, in rugby, they're laws.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's just,
I hope
that's
people on Twitter
wonder.
Come after you for using rugby terms instead of football terms.
Snub. A tackle or challenge that endangers the safety of an opponent or that's uses excessive force or brutality must be sanctioned as serious foul play. Any player who lunges at an opponent in challenging for the ball from the front, from the side, or from behind using one or both legs with excessive force or endangers the safety of an opponent is guilty of serious foul play. So the word there, the key word is excessive. And when you see it in slow motion, or that's excessive, you see it at full speed, it's not really excessive.
Mm.
I think that's the key there.
But it's the endangering, right? I think that is the term that they're using, because I read that last night and I thought, oh, because I was confused also. I was like, is it a red? What does this mean? Where do we stack to Craig's point? Can people tackle? Can people go for a tackle anymore? Mm-hmm. And it's the endangering part. But going back to the result, anytime someone gets hurt, then from a tackle, even if it's clean, could that be saying, oh, you endangered them? Mm. That gray
sport, right?
Part. Yes.
Always being endangered.
I don't know, man.
The Qatari player ends up getting a 5-game added suspension.
I thought about that. Yeah.
By an accident, you know.
Yeah. It reminded me. Sorry, Forrest.
Yeah. I mean, Balogun's just putting his foot on the ground. Like he's up close, and it just so happened it was just really unfortunate that he rolled on his ankle.
But these same people, Craig, were screaming that Messi should have got a red card. On the other hand, they're saying that there shouldn't be a red card. People are very confused about this.
And also confusing and conflating careless and reckless. Like, I think if it's clumsy, it doesn't mean that there's intent. I don't want to bring that into it at all. But like, you have to be able to land. And as Forrest is saying, like the end result is awful. It looks disgusting, right? Because he rolls his ankle because Balogun's cleat is there on the inside of it, right? So that's terrible. But I think the referee forgot that there was an in-between, that there is also a yellow card in his book. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know why it needs to be a red. And I was going to say there when Forrest and I spoke at the same time, it reminded me of the Ali Ahmed high boot where he gets sent off versus Tunisia. And there again, we were talking about careless, reckless, you know, is there in danger? Like, I just think with Balogun, he doesn't really know anything about it. There's no like straightening of the leg and an intent to harm. But the still and the slow-mo is so damning that the referee has no choice almost at that point.
I can't believe he played on.
Yeah.
I can't believe he played on. His ankle looked like it was sideways. I was thinking they shouldn't even show the replay. This is really bad. Next thing you know, he plays the rest of the game.
Going back to the Kane injury, we were all like, the guy did nothing. And then this one, you think this guy's not going to walk again.
Mm.
And because his ankle is like, it's a 90 degree angle. Right? Mm-hmm. When it's on the ground and you're like, there's no way he's getting up. And he did. and he ran on.
Yeah, like an adult shouldn't be able to walk on from that. You see kids, right? And their bones are green and they're kind of spongy and all that sort of stuff. And they get up from stuff. You're like, oh my God, like how?
Yeah.
So it's a miracle really that he got up and walked on. And then to bring Zidane back into the conversation again, I didn't intend to do this today when I woke up, but I think he's the first player since Zidane to score and get a red card in a World Cup game.
Oh yeah. Zidane brace, they call it.
Correct. Yeah. And it's a miracle that Bosnian didn't need a brace.
I was going to say, very well done. Yeah. Pick that one up.
Ronaldinho braces. Anyway, we could go down a variety of avenues there. But listen, I mean, like I said, they're going to miss out on Balogun. They should be able to appeal these things. They should. They won't. They can't. I don't know why you can't appeal red cards like that. I mean, the damage has been done, I suppose, within the match. But to lose him now for Belgium, I mean, he'd be salivating getting out of Belgian defense, wouldn't he? It's too bad because they have been very good.
Because who steps in now? Pepe?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough loss. Tough loss.
It's a big loss.
And credit to them because they were still the better team by a mile with Blair down.
That free kick was beautiful, by the way, wasn't it?
That's
tough. But you don't think so?
I mean, it was well executed, but should the goalkeeper have not done better on it?
Well, don't cry. Yeah, tell us.
I think he should have probably done better.
Oh. Yeah.
It's like he could have taken another step. He could have taken another shuffle to the right before he dove. And he just sort of planted and decided, I'll go from here. Because it wasn't like it was thrashed over the bar. Yeah. But it was, I mean, great, or the wall. But it was great technique to knuckle it kind of just over.
Yeah.
Really,
quite close. It's tough on that, right? Because it's almost too close.
It is tough.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the wall looks too close almost. I like looked at him line up and I was like, they seem like they're way too close here.
It did. It looked like they were eight or 7 yards away.
Mm-hmm. It was just funny to me that Sharms wanted Craig to back him up. And this is what it's like. This is what it's like when you're the non-player. I do the same thing and you want some support from your take, right? Like Dubs, Jimmy, Craig. What do you think?
Validate my take.
Yes. You're absolutely wrong.
It was terrible. Worst free kick maybe I've ever seen. Jesus, you're going to get hammered now by the American listeners.
Exactly.
Could you? Okay, let's, hey, JC, let's roll in some of our favorite coffee.
Well, it's the World Cup Watch Canada.
Brought to you by Tim Hortons. Game on with Canada. Tim's.
Game on. Can you believe we've barely mentioned Canada in almost an hour?
Yeah.
It just shows what games we had yesterday.
Yep.
And games we're having today. And Craig's wonderful tones. Mm-hmm. But Canada, Morocco, getting closer. I'm going to be going to Morocco training today as well, actually.
Are you?
Yeah. Yeah. See what they're doing in their warm-ups. See their warm-ups differ from Canada's warm-ups because that's all we get to see.
Well, I saw your Instagram yesterday where you said they wouldn't let you near the pitch or near...
No, they never do. They never do.
Okay, so...
Just Sharms, though. Everybody else.
Yeah. Some reason I'm the only person outside there.
So what are you doing? What are you doing when you're like... Are they... Do you see them training and they're far off? Or...
No. They allow you in on the sidelines for the first 15 minutes when they're warming up, basically, doing some one touch, that kind of stuff. 15 minutes. This is the same for any club as well. It's just the way they do it in soccer. And then you're ushered away, either into a close room or total bugger off. On this occasion, so the England game is going on at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm.
The England game. And they've got this big screen in the foyer. We're at the Houston Dynamo training facility, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this big, and so all these people gathering around, a lot of, people of English descent too. Mm-hmm. And then they turn it off because they don't want us hanging around. They, what are you doing? And the security guards are so apologizing. They're sorry, it's not us. They told us to turn it off. They, it's a bloody World Cup game. England's losing 1-0 to Congo, probably for the best. I'm not watching it, but don't turn it off. So anyway, then we're just ushered away. And at that point, I just throw my toys at the prams, stomp off. Mm-hmm. Shoot a hit somewhere else.
And that was James Sharman, Footy Prime Diary.
Yeah, page stained with tears.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so Canada. Okay, what's the story with Canada? We haven't got much time here, but we've gone over midfield. We've gone over defenders. Like up top, are we going Tanny? Are we going Kyle? They're your two options. Promise isn't ready yet, presumably. Dubs. So we know why Tanny gets in the team because he presses so well, and they're going to press. They're going to have to press in this game. But they also might only have one or two chances to score a goal in this entire match, in which case you probably want Kyle over Tanny. What do you do?
I don't know if Kyle Aaron is fit to start, quite frankly. I know that he's valued by Jesse Marsh in his out of possession and how he leads the line. And before, you know, I feel like over the last year or even two, more than that, where this tandem of Jonathan David and Kyle Aaron were much maligned. We're like, you know, this doesn't come to fruition and you don't really see it. But Jesse Marsh loves both of them when they're pressing and the way that they knit together, you know, Jonathan David a little bit deeper and then Kyle Aaron looking for the trigger. So they're going to have to be high tempo and aggressive and unrelenting, but pick their spots, like look for those triggers, go quick and stay connected. So I do like Kyle Aaron for that, even though Tanny Alawashe and all the work that he does, like the physicality of his game and his ability to just replicate runs and to, you know, keep that tempo really high and that energy high. I think Jesse Marsh values him for that. But it was curious to me, and we kind of summed it up as Kyle Aaron on the bench for potential extra time sub for Jonathan David. And it never gets to that point. It's not needed because Stephen Eustachio steps up, chests that ball down and wasn't necessarily a thrash into the back of the net, but picks his spot, right? And gets the winner, is the hero on the day. So Laren is the unused sub. And I feel like it's a little bit of the elephant in the room. We haven't talked about it enough, but I think it looked like he was carrying a knock from the Switzerland match. He wasn't moving the way that we see him move typically. He looked like he was hampered by something. So I think he had maybe managed minutes. And so they're like, okay, extra time, you can play half an hour. So I do see it as Tanny again, Sharms. And then honestly, I think it's Laren again for a sub for David if that's needed. And otherwise, you're bumping Promise up. Maybe he's clear for a little bit more than half an hour. Maybe he's up to a half. And that's the plan. It's Tanny to wear out that back line and then Promise to come in. And he's the clinical guy in a box that you need.
That's I would agree with that. I think that's what they're probably going to do.
You're on the street, Sharms. What's the word on Kyle Aaron?
It's not that
like I don't.
This team have it's a tight ship, man. They don't let much out. They really don't. There's no loose lips sinking ships there. Let me tell you.
Right.
compared to previous regimes, when everything slips out. It could well be the case because I'm surprised we didn't see Kyle too. My thing about the whole Kyle for John David though in extra time, do you do that with penalties on the horizon when you want Jonathan David?
You want both, right?
Yeah,
want both. You do. So, but then you take off what, a midfielder and a game when you if we're really jumping low forward here,
crossing fingers, we get there
to win a game of penalties against Morocco. But if
I'll
they are,
I'll take penalties. Right.
Yeah,
absolutely. Penalties, Craig.
I'll take penalties.
No kidding. Oh, man. It's funny. I'm wondering how the average fan's going to be approaching this game. Will they be terrified and nervous and sweaty palms? Or, like Jesse Marsh says, listen, we've got nothing to lose in this one. We're going to just go for it. I don't know if I believe him or not because I can't believe Jesse right now. But when he says yesterday, we're just going to go for it. We're going to do what we do. I think he will. Personally, I think they will just go for it, like, and do what they're best at. And that isn't control the play, of course. That's just a, you know, press up high. But I wonder, because it is, when the whistle blows, we're all going to be nervous. It's just the way we are as football fans. But the reality is, they could crash out 4-0 on Saturday, and it's still a gloriously successful World Cup for Canada.
Wow.
Don't you think? No? You don't think so?
I hate that we're going there already. Like, I think, you know, where we were before about thinking about penalties and like that would be incredible for us, right? To get it to that point. Yeah. So maybe it's, you know, it's this is the same argument, just a different take on it. I think that would be a really tough pill to swallow. I think eventually, you know, after the sting wears off, you would think, wow, like look what this team did. But I think they're really able to get something out of this match. And I mean, does that mean to beat Morocco and to go on? It's tough to define that. But I think to be competitive is maybe the better choice of words there.
I just think that, again, I think you're right. And I think we'll all be very nervous during the match. But if you replace the name Morocco with Belgium or Croatia or France with the same players, we'd be looking at this differently, the average fan, because Morocco is at that level of football, I think.
Oh,
they're a top team in Europe, top team in the world. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Anyway, well, we'll break it down more tomorrow. We're out of time once again. That was a fun show. We got to some really controversy finally, which is always great. Make sure you like and subscribe. Give us reviews, good or negative.
I've got a few of those.
We have an amazing, our shop is open again at wearefootyprime.com. JC's designed a beautiful decoy t-shirt. It's brilliant. So that's available now for purchase as well. Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Till next time, cheers for listening.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at @footyprimeig and on Twitter at @footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
And a bucket hat, too? I saw, is there a bucket hat?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
JC. Charmin bucket hat.
I love it. I've got to go, guys. See you later.
You got to go. You. Hey, that was great, Charms. Thank you.